Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Schmo Zone podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Bluemon. Now, everybody always asks me, what hair product do you use? What do you put in that beautiful hair as the Schmo? I use Bluemon. I use Ascend, their volume cream. I didn't know what a volume cream was, a pre-styler was, until I started using the Bluemon product. It makes my hair a lot thicker and full. I blow dry it or I let it air dry. And then the best thing for you guys to use, we had it on the screen for a second before, it is their Discovery Kit. I personally use the fifth sample. I love this stuff. Try it out. They have 5 different kinds for you to sample. Get you some. Promo code SCHMO, 10% off, Bluemon.com. Get you some. And another sponsor of today's episode is Fusion CBD Products. Use the promo code SCHMO, get 20% off Fusion CBD Products. I love this stuff. I love their Fusion CBD sports water. We're drinking it on the show. They have everything that you need. They have sleep and recovery stuff. They have pre-workout energy. They have tinctures. They have rubs. Anything you need for your recovery needs CBD, Fusion CBD Sports. Water is what we're drinking here. Get you some. Let's start the show. Welcome back, boys and girls, to another episode of the Schmo Zone podcast, episode 29. I'm Dave Schmolensen, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
And I'm Helen E. Sports.
Fresh off the 29th birthday, how are you enjoying your last year in your 20s so far, Helen?
You know what? I'm trying to definitely make the most of it, and I want to give a big thanks to such a great birthday weekend, David. So thank you. I had such a great time. And we went to the Eiffel Tower restaurant. It was really romantic.
Probably some of the best interviews in Vegas. We got
the best seat in the house.
The best seat in the house. Best view in the house. The Bellagio fountain, which goes off every 30 minutes. We got to see it like, what, 4 times? 5 times? Mm-hmm. Don't know, but it was amazing. And couldn't have asked for a better person to spend that type of view and dinner with.
Thank you. And I loved my cake. I still look at the photos even today because there's real roses on it.
Well, you made a big deal out of this cake. No pressure. So it was customized. I think it was actually supposed to be, we don't have any photos of it, but maybe we'll post them later on social media. It was like a modified wedding cake, but you were worth it. But they suckered me in. They said this type of cake, because I said, look, there's only going to be 4 of us. We really don't want a serving bigger than 4 people here. Like, oh, well, our smallest cake, it'd have to go in the wedding section, 4 to 6 people. I'm like, okay, fine. We'll figure it out.
Was it 8-inch round, right? Or was it 6-inch?
I think it was 8, and it had some girth to it. It was high.
It was girthy, yeah, for sure. Thick.
Good frosting, you know, vanilla base with the Bavarian cream. I know you wanted that.
Yeah, plain old vanilla, turning 29. Yeah, so I had a great birthday. And I know David's a romantic, I know, kind of.
Kind of. I am or I'm not, because before I'm not, and then I do something like this for your birthday and for special occasions, and then I become this romantic guy. See, that's why you have to undersell and overdeliver, and you can't do it all the time. You can't have flowers every week, but you get flowers on special occasions.
Okay.
That's because you just have to build it up, you know? Men, gentlemen, boys, paying attention at home. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. It's a grind. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You have to ease the kindness, the gifts, the joy over time. So there's exponential growth. You throw everything in the kitchen sink right off the bat, you're setting yourself up for failure in the long term.
Well, for my 30th birthday, you know, I'm going to be expecting like someone to jump out of the cake.
There's always room for improvement. And hopefully your 30th birthday doesn't overlap with the onset of a global pandemic like mine did.
I know. Well, don't you feel that things are slowly loosening up? I mean, not like loosening up, but I'm saying, for example, we went out to dinner for your 30th birthday, right? In March, that's when everything was about to shut down and close. And then compared to my 29th birthday, that was on the strip as well. Did it seem like, you know, things are going on the
It's upward? Slowly but surely, but obviously things are not the same.
Of course.
We won't get into that. But what we will get into is we are rocking some pretty sweet, fresh merch. The Schmozone t-shirts are live, theschmozone.com. We're going to be launching a promotion on the Instagram account, on yours, on mine, on the Schmozones. And these are pretty killer shirts. They're comfortable. These are the OG originals. We will start producing some limited edition shirts as this thing goes on. And tell them, the first 100 people, what they get for ordering these things.
You will get a custom message, not only from me, but from the Schmo himself. Yes, we are going to write it by hand.
That's right.
Except should I write it for you? Because your handwriting, I mean, I love you, David, but it's
chicken scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you don't use it, you lose it. This digital world, we're typing. I get the thumb workouts from texting all the time. I'm not writing as much, but I'll give them my John Hancock Schmoes John Hancock. We'll do something for those first 100 people that order. We'll make it special. The merch is only beginning. Let's get Schmo Zone Nation going, and we'll build this thing up. And I'm stoked for today's guest and for today's podcast. He's not here right now, and that's because he's coming from a meeting with the boss man, Dana White.
Fresh off the meeting.
He's coming right here to studio. Good thing we're down the street. We're not too far from the UFC headquarters. But we have MMA agent, Markel Martin coming on the podcast.
Yes.
And you ask, who the hell is Markel Martin? Well, you better get accustomed to that name, because he represents GSP, Kevin Lee, and an important figure that I'm about to bring up, Francis Ngannou.
Yep.
Among others. He represents other people. I just want to name drop those three in particular.
Yeah, and to piggyback off Francis Ngannou, obviously huge heavyweight trilogy that went down this past weekend, UFC 252, went down at the Apex. Curious to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I always said, and I felt this way going into the first match in 2018, DC versus Stipe, two of the best, two of the all-time greats. I always felt that Stipe was the better overall fighter. I felt like his stand-up was better. The wrestling, yeah, you can give to DC, but Stipe has a wrestling background as well. I just thought that Stipe, the craftiness, the way he's been able to overcome obstacles, man, the amazing feat he's had, the legends he's brought down in the heavyweight division. In DC, yes, he's been a heavyweight, but he has not been a heavyweight in the UFC until fighting Stipe. I thought it'd be too much to overcome. The first match, he clipped him. He got him good. He studied hard, DC, that is, over Stipe. The second match, the adjustments and the championship rounds Stipe had. I had the edge going into Stipe. Slight edge, you could call 50-50. We both talked about maybe a 51-49 edge to Stipe. I'm not shocked at the results. I'm not shocked that it went five rounds. It went the distance. I'm happy both these guys came out relatively healthy. It looks like both of them have some eye issues.
Yeah,
I mean,
hopefully
it's not new.
DC's eye is okay.
I hope so. I really do.
And of course, Stipe's eye.
Too. Stipe's eye was poked in the first round, but it's not tick for tat. It's not a situation like that. It's two really competitive guys that are at the best of their crafts at the highest level with everything on the line. Everyone talked about the winner of this fight, greatest heavyweight of all time. No questions left behind.
Now, the big question is, though, and I'm going to save the Francis stuff for when Markel comes in studio, but do you think that really was DC's last fight?
I think that he can be lured with money. I think it's his last fight in the UFC. I think he's got a very, very big broadcast career in front of him. You've already seen it. He's got Detail, ESPN Plus.
He's great at it.
He's like the A guy. He's with Joe Rogan and Dominic Cruz and John Anik. I mean, he's the A guy when it comes to being that MMA athlete on these broadcasts for pay-per-views and big fights. He's got a huge career in front of him. I think that there could be like a celebrity type matchup. Never say never anymore. Mike Tyson's fighting in
celebrity
his 50s.
Matchup.
Roy Jones Jr. Like a celebrity style matchup. Like yeah. DC comes back in his 50s to fight John Jones. Like a Chuck Liddell Tito 3 type thing. I think he can be lured in with the money's right to like a celebrity one-off thing. Maybe in Saudi Arabia you get the big like crossover type fights like they do with boxing,
so
MMA.
So you think he's done competing in the UFC octagon, though?
I think he's done competing for the highest level for the legacy type fights. Yes. Okay. I think he's done in the UFC octagon. I think he can be lured into like a celebrity type fight 5, 10, 15 years down the line. So it's hard to consider that the same thing.
Okay. I see where you're coming from. You mentioned John Jones. Again, I don't want to say too much. I'll just wait until Markel comes here.
Yeah.
About the heavyweight division. But in that co-main event, Sugar Sean O'Malley, he was on our podcast last week. He fought Chito Vera.
I don't want to jinx anything here because that's now twice the two most recent fighters have come on, Edmund Shahbazian and then Sean O'Malley. But I guess Sean's come on 3 times. He's 2-1 yeah. now coming on the podcast. We're not doing that. We're not saying that.
No,
you're giving me this look like
no,
we're...
What? No, you, that's what you told me behind the scenes.
No.
You're like, wait, what?
No. Listen.
No, look. Everything's like it's a.
He got hit. This injury that he sustained, it's not the first time it's happened in the UFC octagon. Michael Chandler, it happened to him against Brent Primus. It's happened to other fighters. I think Henry Cejudo dealt with this type of issue against Demetrius Johnson. I think the first time. Point being is that it's not an uncommon thing. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens periodically, and it was too much to overcome. It definitely was part of the fight. You can't take anything away from Chito Vera. I just hope Chito can capitalize on this name and he can continue to grow his brand and we could see what he does in the damage. But if anyone thinks that the Sugar Show is done, is derailed, is anything, they are completely mistaken. Hey, if Sean O'Malley was meant to lose this fight, I think he lost in a great way. In the sense that, look, you didn't get to see him in his full capacity once that leg was compromised. The Sugar Show's got so much left in store.
And I've been even seeing how people are saying, what about a rematch?
I think it's possible down the line.
Or later down the line.
I think later down the line, I think both of these guys should be fighting other opponents.
Yeah.
Chito Vera, rightfully so, climb up the ranks, get in that top 10, do what you got to do. Sean O'Malley, still top 15 fighter. Give him top 15 caliber fights. Maybe it's 1, 2, 3, 4 fights down the line, but I definitely want to see these guys again at some point, and I think we will.
I know Chito is in the rankings now, number 14, and Sean O'Malley dropped out of the rankings.
I think Sean was ranked 14 going into the fight, so it only makes sense that they swap places. And I know Chito was probably flirting with the top 15 if he was just out of it. So it's not like Sean O'Malley's fallen from a cliff here.
No, not at all.
No,
come
but
on, he's young.
Everybody wants to kick a dog when it's down.
I know.
Everybody wants
to
do
that. Sad.
It's part of human society in this sick world and we live in.
Just like the other day when we were driving on the freeway and there was that big car accident and then everyone stops and looks, but no one's trying to help or anything. But that kind of goes into what you're saying where everyone just likes to look at, you know, failure or just drama.
Everybody does. And we can both piggyback off of that. Nobody gave us the time in the day until they saw that we have numbers, that we have an audience, that people actually tune in to listen to what we have to say. Do you know how many people that actually saw the Schmo character, like in action, interviewing not just MMA fighters, but NFL superstars, NBA talent, exactly, Hall of Famers, coaches, every major sport, but nobody gave a crap, especially the big networks, because I'm doing it my way, baby.
Exactly. That's how it should be done, and especially in this era. Just like I've mentioned before how I started my show, initially my radio show, with a co-host, and then he quit on me, and then the other co-host said I sucked, which was probably true at the time, but I just have that mentality where if I suck, I just want to be better and I want to try to improve. But circling back to the bantamweight division, just because this weekend, Frankie Edgar, Pedro Munhoz will be at the fights inside the Apex, and they're fighting in the main event.
Big fight, but yeah. And I do want to say this too. The Schmo got to interview Dana White. Helen, you were right there. Yes. Obviously, you filmed it. We were right in front of the octagon, and I got kind of a lay of the land from questions from Dana. And that's why I feel like the character's so effective. It's because I could ask a lot of hard pressing questions in an efficient, quick, and you know, kind of fun manner. Like that's not pressing him, that's not confrontational, that can really open up and be at ease. And I did ask him about this fight, Pedro Munhoz and mm-hmm. Frankie Edgar, if it would have any implications on who would be fighting Peter Yan for the Bantamweight Championship, because I still find it completely astounding, especially because there are fights in the Bantamweight division is kind of shaping out. Marlon Moraes has a fight. The people at the top of the heat. Yes. How come Aljamain Sterling has not been announced yet to be fighting him?
We interviewed him last week as well.
We interviewed him as well. And it makes no sense to me that Aljamain Sterling isn't fighting Peter Yan for the Bantamweight Championship, a date announced. I think it will end up happening, and it will happen in December. It will happen here in 2020. But I'm just surprised no deal's done yet. And it's probably getting done right now as we say this.
True. But we were in Fight Island. Isn't that when you asked Piotr after his win in the post-fight press conference about Aljamain, right?
I did. I asked him who's most deserving, body of work and everything, and without hesitation, he said it was Aljamain Sterling in his accent. Great. Yeah. He's great at English. Better at English than I can speak his language, that's for sure.
Yeah, hey, it's all good.
So so obviously the winner of the Frankie Pedro fight is not fighting for the title, but they're right there. They're right in the thick of things. And always excited to see Frankie Edgar, a legend, a future Hall of Famer in the sport, fighting now at Bantamweight when he's fought so many great wars at Featherweight.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of looking at the top 15 rankings. And then now we have Cody Garbrandt, of course, dropping down to flyweight to fight Davison Figueiredo for that title.
Yeah, that's going to be good, too. So since we're all just talking about fights here, we might as well bring it up, too. Go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code SCHMOZONE. They will match up to 50% of what you deposit of up to $1,000. You bet $200, there's $400 that you can win there. Place some bets this entire month, this entire rest of the year is absolutely loaded, and you can count on both Helen and I, or the Schmo, to be interviewing the best names in the sport. And to be getting some great reaction. She's laughing at me because...
but it's true. Inside jokes.
Inside jokes, but it's true. We will. We are going to talk to these people. So it's we're going to find out whatever information you want. So there we go.
One last thing I just want to point out for the bantamweight is Merab.
The machine. Yeah. La machina.
So he's ranked number 12 now.
People need to recognize Merab Dvalishevi. Dvalishevi. I will probably mispronounce that name a million times, and even in characters the Shmo I will, but he is a threat. His cardio is the best, is might be the best in all of MMA
right now. Remember when we interviewed Al Iaquinta a few months back, and then they were telling us when they went to Red Rock how freaking fast we saw the video.
It's
true.
So here's the deal. Here's the band. It was when Aljamain Sterling was actually here.
Yeah, and UFC 250.
And he beat Corey Sandhagen.
Yes.
It was the week before, and Merab, his training partner, was here. They all, and Al Iaquinta with the Ben Askren hairstyle, they were all here, and they all went to Red Rock, and they all went on a hike, and it was 12 o'clock, and it was in the afternoon. And literally, Merab, this guy, Merab, is sprinting up the mountains, rock cardio for days, and he's just an absolute beast. And that's all we have to say about Merab Dvalishevi. And I screwed up his name again, but I'm not going to waste any more time because he is now here in the flesh. We brought him up at the beginning of the show. Come take a seat. Put your headphones on.
What's going on?
He's
guys?
The man, Markel Martin. Fresh from the UFC, fresh from an interview, not an interview, a meeting, an important meeting with the boss man, Dana White. Thanks for stopping into the Schmo Zone, my man.
Thanks for having me, guys. Sorry I'm a little bit late, but
no worries at all.
When you're in with the boss man, you know, sometimes you got to just stay there. You know,
you're on his time.
Priority, right, exactly.
So a couple things. You can put those on if you want. Totally up to you. You can hear us either way. Anytime you want to adjust the camera, look at number 3. That will be focused on your beautiful face.
Got it.
Talk right through it, not on top of it.
Good? Oh, through it. There we go.
Yeah, man, you're great. Good to see you.
I like the setup you guys got here.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, you guys are doing all right for yourselves. Look at that. I'd like to see it.
We're hustling, man. Yeah. You know it.
Thanks for having me.
No, of course. I appreciate you stopping by, especially I know you have like a day trip here flying in from L.A. because, you know, I know you're here just for the Schmo Zone and the Boss Man was the afterthought, right?
Right, but, of course.
Naturally. But a lot to discuss with you, but we might as well just start fresh off of everything. So what was your purpose of going over to meet with Dana White earlier?
Well, I think it's no surprise, right, that we just finished watching, you know, probably one of the greatest heavyweight fights in UFC history with Cormier and Stipe. Stipe came out victorious, and, you know, one of my guys, Francis Ngannou, if you heard of him, you know, he's you know, been doing okay for himself, you know, four fights in a row, you know, winning by first round knockout. You know, we're definitely at a position where we feel that he's deserving of the next title shot against Stipe. So that was the main one of the reasons why I went to go talk to Mr. Dana White, you know.
And how did those conversations go?
Well, I can't share everything, okay. You know, out of just respect for Dana. You know, I always allow people, I want Dana to be in the room to, you know, to kind of defend himself. But it was a very, very good, productive conversation. I think, you know, the UFC has got some plans for, you know, the future of the division. You know, they're going to take their time. So there's no, you know, immediate announcements. There's no, you know, real confirmations outside of Francis's next.
But when can we expect to see Francis return?
Shoot, that's a question for Dana and the UFC brass, right? Hunter and Mick Maynard and those guys. But I would love to see Francis fight Stipe probably the last pay-per-view of this year. You know, I think that would be a nice kind of capstone to the year. I feel like it's been such a crazy year, and what better way to kind of send it off with Francis raising his hand with the belt.
Well, I think just to clarify, Francis is still currently in Cameroon?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, he's been in Cameroon for about a month, but he'll be back in Vegas where he resides sometime early September.
Early September. Month, yeah. Get right back at it with Extreme Couture, Dewey Cooper, and those guys well. So. So I do want to mention, too, last week the Schmo interviewed Dana White, and he definitely, like you mentioned, 100% confirmed that Francis is next in line for the title shot. And to piggyback off of that, if we look at the different trends, Stipe, because of the eye injury and the wars he's been in D.C. the past couple of years, he's only been fighting, we've noticed, like kind of once a year.
Yeah.
So if December, like the timeline that you want, doesn't happen, the question is, how long is he willing to wait out to get that fight against Stipe for the belt?
Francis?
Yes.
Shoot, we're not trying to wait too long. You know, I think, you know, granted, Stipe had valid reasons as to why he couldn't fight. I know he had eye surgery and then he had the pandemic. So I won't say, you know, he's just actively trying to just say, no, I'm just fighting once a year. That would be kind of crazy as a champion, as great as he is, and we all know. So I understand that he's going to take his time, heal up, spend time with his family, all good. But I think it's well within reason for him to come back and fight, you know, in December. But again, that's between him and his team with the UFC has planned. But I think to answer your question, I think Francis isn't trying to wait too long. He's been ready after every one of his last fights.
Oh, yeah.
Because
we've
seen it. Yeah, he's not taking too much damage.
Especially
right?
The past four.
Yeah.
Not going with.
Right. So, you know, we're constantly hounding the UFC, like, hey, put us back in there. But we trust their timing, you know. All good things happen for a reason. I'm super impressed with just his work ethic in the off time. You know, Francis, I mean, Eric Nixick, Dewey Cooper, and those guys at Extreme are just next level. And I got to give respect where it's due, because Francis stays ready. It's crazy. Like, if it were me, I would take some time off. But that dude's steady grinding.
Yeah, he's hungry for that belt.
How could you not be?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He's after, and this is what's so crazy. he fought for the title, what, in January of 2017 in Boston, lost to Stipe. Granted, you know, Stipe was on that night by far the better fighter. Since then, Francis has put his head down, accepted that defeat, right? He had the lapse, I would call it, against Derek Lewis, lost that fight. And then I remember when I signed him, I said, look, you know, we got to put our head down, and you specifically, and just go to work, right? In the gym, mentally, physically, you know, whatever you got to do, because the next time that you fight for the title, and believe me, you will, you're going to be more than prepared to win. And people may say, oh, he lost to Stipe before. That was 3 years ago on a crazy rise to the top that Francis had. Francis has not been in this MMA game for that long. You know, people like have a short memory in this MMA world for some reason, and I get it. But once he comes back, you guys are going to see a different Francis.
So when did you sign him?
I was trying to sign Francis, man, the minute. I'll tell you guys my kind of backstory in a minute. But I signed Francis, I think, shortly after the Derek Lewis fight. However, I had been trying to build that relationship with him for well over a year prior to that. I think like the first month he moved to Vegas is when I met him in person.
Excellent. And we're going to get all into your background, because there's some things I want our audience to hear about your background too, and those relationships there. But I can't help but not bring up the fact that John Jones has been active on Twitter, on social media, about moving up to heavyweight and about that fight. And I think timing-wise, the fight maybe with Francis or anywhere for him in the equation was a few months ago. But I'm very curious to hear the positioning and where that stands now with John Jones coming to the equation and giving up essentially his light heavyweight championship and letting that go the next person in line.
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised about that. I don't know if media had, you know, caught wind of that before he kind of made that or had any kind of inclination. But I was surprised that he vacated, you know, and he's been expressing for a while that he wants to move up to heavyweight. You know, I think, you know, I don't know. I try to look at it from an agent standpoint, right? And then I also just like as a fan, like I'm a fan of John Jones. He's one of the best to ever do it, obviously. I think the timing for him, you know, he announced that he's ready. I see the games, you know, the Twitter games that people play, these fighters play, and fair play to him. But I think he's just going to have to just be patient, man, like, you know. And I stylistically, as a fan, I would say him versus Stipe is a better fight for him than Francis. If I was John Jones, I'm fighting. You know what I mean? Let's just be real. You know what I mean? Let's be fully transparent. Like, not a lot of people want to fight Francis. That's just facts. You know what I mean?
Well, but speaking of stylistically, though, because that trilogy just happened, DC and Stipe, who do you think would have been a tougher matchup for Francis, DC or Stipe rematch, of course?
Great question. I would say a tougher matchup out of DC and Stipe. I would say probably Stipe, because, you know, again, Stipe has had his number, and then you know, with DC, although, I mean, dude is again another one of the GOATs. Yeah, I just don't know if he's ready to take that power. I think the height, you know what I mean, the strength is just a different beast. The speed, you know, but I would say Stipe.
I want to close the John Jones conversation, because the one point I wanted to bring in there is he made this announcement. He has his legacy. Dana refers to him as the GOAT.
Yep.
And if the timing doesn't work out with Stipe, because what surprised me in this conversation this week, as everyone's talking about, this could be DC's last fight, I was thinking the other side of the equation. Could this be Stipe's last fight? What does he have left to worry about?
So
you think the same. So is it possible, because it wouldn't be worth it for John Jones to take any fight that's not a title fight in a way, would it be possible to either have an interim fight if the timing's not right with Stipe? It's an interim UFC championship fight between Francis Ngannou and John Jones.
That's in favor of John Jones for the interim, but it's not necessarily in favor of us. You know what I mean? We want the belt. From our standpoint, like, we want the belt. We want the real belt. No diss to the interim or whatever. It's a time and a place for an interim. But make no mistake, like, we're coming after the real title, like, undisputed, right? Like, I don't want anyone saying, like, no. Francis is about to earn every bit of the success that's coming his way.
So we're closing any chapter on any potential interim. It's title or nothing.
Yeah, it's title or nothing for us.
Fair enough.
And I know Francis, when we spoke, I believe back in January, he mentioned, of course, his love for boxing as well.
Yeah.
Are there any updates with that? Is that still something he also is trying to pursue? Because I know how much he likes boxing.
Yeah. I mean, there's no updates in terms of, like, hey, boxing announcements or anything like that. That is and has been a long time aspiration of Francis's. Like, many people don't know that when the dude's story is incredible. I won't tell it all. But when he left Africa, right, in his early 20s, to travel to Paris, it was on the dream of becoming a boxer, not an MMA fighter. You know what I mean? He had that. But because he was poor and had no money, and he jumped in a tournament, an MMA tournament, and won, right? And won some cash. He said, shoot, I like this. I can send, you know, I can help out my family. You know, I can help out myself a little bit. And that's how the rise of Francis Ngannou in MMA took off. That's what started.
But, crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, a boxing for sure will be in Francis's future. You know, if we have anything to say with it, and obviously, you know, we trust UFC, we trust Dana with their knowledge. Again, I mean, call it what it is, what you want to say about Dana. You know, I worked for the man before, and I see him, but there shouldn't be much of an argument on the level of foresight that they have when it comes to this sport and this space in the pandemic. You know what I mean? Like, the proof is it is what it is. Like,
yeah. So let's spin this back to you. You just brought it up. You used to work for the man. You used to work for the UFC before you started working with CAA as a agent for MMA fighters and the combat sports division.
Biggest agency in the world. Shout out CAA.
It's a beautiful building. I lived not far from there back in my day, right. My 20s in Los Angeles. But let's go back to your background, man. So how did you make the transition? What was it like working for there? Because you have both perspectives.
Right.
You have the inside perspective and obviously the outside perspective. So it gives you a unique perspective to make decisions going forward.
Yeah, if not for that unique perspective, right, having worked as an employee at UFC, I probably wouldn't have been able to sign the type of clients or understand the business the way that I do. I don't claim to be Mr. MMA professional. I didn't grow up in the gym. You know what I mean? I trained a little bit here and there and did some jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, but, you know, that's because I worked at UFC, right? So I'll give you kind of my quick background, right? I grew up playing football and running track. I went to UNLV, Las Vegas, to play football. Right, I had 5 surgeries, so that kind of, you know, dream aspirations kind of stopped there of going pro and playing in the NFL. I was getting I was finishing up my graduate degree, my master's in sports management, and I was working at Nordstrom as a personal stylist, and an executive by the name of Mike Mossholder was one of my clients at Nordstrom, and I asked him, I said, hey man, you know, if this is how I asked him. I said, if you don't mind me asking, how do you make your money? I'm very inquisitive. I like to ask a lot of questions. I'm like, what do you do? He's like, oh, I make the UFC money. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I do sponsorships and this. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I'm finishing up my master's in sports management. Can I apply for an internship? Long story short, I went into the office at UFC, the old office, not the new one that you guys see now, like, you know, by in and out.
Palisation. Yes. Yeah.
We were just talking about that last night. We were bringing that up.
Yeah. So I'm part of the old regime of UFC family, where it's just 300 employees, right? And I went in there to get an internship. I told him my story, told him what I want to do. I'm very, like, aspirational and entrepreneurial. He was like, you know what? Like, you know, I'm not going to give you the internship. We're actually going to open up a new position, a sales role in the sponsorship team. And I'd like you to apply for that. So I ended up getting a full-time role with UFC. So I was at UFC from 2011 to 2016, right? My time there was incredible. I you know, obviously met Dana because it's like a family down there, you know?
Something ironic, though. Yeah. You were working at Nordstrom's as an associate. You're styling people. Yeah, tell me the story, because we talked about this months ago, about Dana White bought you that suit, your first suit. And by the way,
for The Bachelorette.
Because you are also a TV, reality TV star, because you were on The Bachelorette. No, you're on The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
How did I miss this? How did I bring this up now?
See, that's going to destroy. I don't even have MMA street cred. So that's going to destroy any little bit of MMA street cred.
You represent the scariest guy in the game,
exactly,
man. Come on.
Exactly.
And GSP.
Right. So I'll give you the quick story on that. So in my time, I think it was like my first or second year working at the UFC, I get a random phone call from The Bachelorette. I didn't know what they were. I knew of the show from
So you never applied?
No.
Oh.
No, I never.
That works. They find you.
No. Yeah, they found me. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I've once met when I was in LA, Newport Beach. I got approached by that producer, the same one. She gave me her card. I wouldn't do it, but you did.
Go. So I had the same reaction, right? But I'm going to give you the full story. So I'm in the office at UFC. I'm working, and I get a phone call, and they're like, "Hey, this is NZK Productions." I'm like, "What?" And they're like, "Yeah, we got your application, blah 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 blah." And I'm like, "No, you guys got the wrong number. Like, click." Right. And then I think they send me an email or something like that, and they call back. Yeah. In the interim, my office mate was like, "Who was that?" I was like, "They said there was the Bachelorette," and she was a huge Bachelorette fan. Like, I knew of it, but I never watched it. And she was like, call them back, answer, blah, blah, blah. So I have another phone call with them. They say, "Hey, we're in Vegas. Can you come meet down at this hotel?" So it was kind of like sketchy, but she was like, "You gotta go." So I was like, "All right, fine." Like, I'm getting off work. So I went to this hotel. They asked me about my past relationships. And I remember telling them, I'm like, "Yeah, well, there's not too many black people on the show, right? So I probably won't get picked anyway. And you guys do this tour all around the nation." Like, this is true. And they're like, "Oh, yeah." They kind of like laughed it off. They're like, "No, we got a good feeling about you." So I'm like, "All right, whatever." So I go back the next day to work. Right after having this, a couple weeks go by, they send me application stuff, and I'm downstairs because at UFC, they used to have a gym downstairs where we'd work out, and Dana and Craig Brassard and a lot of the execs would be down there. And so I was always just like on a high buy basis to, you know, Dana, right? Just, you know, everyone in the gym. And so I went up to Dana. I said, "Hey, Dana, the Bachelorette called me, and they may ask me to be on this show." And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, the Bachelorette called me." And he starts like laughing at me, right? Just like, he started to clown me a little bit. And I just wanted you to know first, because I'm not trying to like lose my job over this show. He was like, "Bro, like, have fun, enjoy your life." Because I was 25, 26 at the time. And he was like, "Your job will be here when you get back." So the suit story came by because the Bachelorette, if you guys haven't seen the Bachelorette, they asked for, you know, you to be prepped with suits for the rose ceremony. And, you know what I mean? I never owned a suit up to that day. And I told the lady, I'm like, "Hey, I know how to dress, but I don't own the suit. I'll just try to look presentable." And she was like, "Oh, can you go buy a suit at JCPenney?" I'm like, "Nah, that's not my style. I'm not buying no damn suit at JCPenney." So he calls me. I'm on my lunch break. I get a call. It's actually from my boss's office, and it's Dana. So my heart dropped. I'm like, "Oh my God, I must be in trouble." And he's like, "Hey, Markel, what's up?" I'm like, "What's going on, Dana? Everything straight?" And he's like, "Yeah, I heard that you don't own a suit." And I'm like, "Yeah, no, it's all good." He was like, "Nah, forget that. Like, come to my office tomorrow, set up with my assistant. I'm getting you a suit made." He flew David August. If you guys know, David August is but David August is one of the biggest kind of suit guys in the game, I guess you can say. He's the guy who also has a deal with Conor McGregor. All of Conor's suits and line is from David August. So fun fact that I like to brag about just to myself is I had a David August suit before Conor McGregor. You heard that, Conor. So Facts. Facts are facts. And
that's how I brag about Joanna Elba, who styles all the NBA stars, the Anthony Davises, the Russell Westbrooks, Magic Johnson. She made the first custom schmo suit before everybody.
No way.
But it's not David August before McGregor.
Yeah.
So you got that.
Right. So David August flew out, and I was in Dana's office getting fitted for a custom-made suit. And when I still have the video to this day, because when I went to go pick up the suits in Orange County, I had to send Dana a thank you video, because that's a side of Dana that people don't see that I know, because having worked there, I was just probably, 16 months into the job, and this dude bought me two custom-made suits, and not only suits, but shoes and everything. Like, it was basically, it was incredible. You know what I mean? Nothing that, and these are expensive suits.
And he hates wearing suits himself too, so I'm sure he could understand
he don't
gotta
wear a suit, right.
And you're absolutely right. There's a lot of sides to the boss man that the media and the general public just doesn't get to see.
Yeah.
But the people that work for him, they feel loyal to a T for a reason.
Yeah. So going back to like me, being on both sides, like, granted, I see the other side of Dana, right? Like, he's a savage when it comes to business. And I mean that in a respectful way, because he's been in the game for so long, right? Yeah. It's one thing working at UFC, right? And it's different than being on the other side of UFC and understanding the business. So I respect the hell out of Dana and those guys. It's an interesting position, but like, I was part of the layoffs, right? Back in, when the company got sold from WME, the $4 billion deal, right, there was, obviously because of the acquisition and redundancies, it happens, right? It's natural in kind of the corporate world. And I was one of those affected. And a week later, I had heart surgery. So I was just like,
wow,
down on my luck. I was praying, man, just like, I had no job. Then I had heart surgery, 7 days later. October 18th was the day, and October 25th I had heart surgery, 2016. And then I was healing up from my heart surgery, and then, I was saying all these affirmations and stuff, and then 2 months later, I think it was, I got a call from CIA. I had no idea who CIA was. And they were like, hey, we heard about you because one of my colleagues dropped my name to them, right? So it's crazy how the universe kind of works. And like, I didn't know what I was gonna do, because again, I just been playing sports all my life. So UFC was my first job out of college, and because UFC at the time was the only sport in Vegas. Now you got hockey and all these other sports, soccer and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just a different animal now. But that's how I became an MMA agent, I guess you can say.
Did that same colleague apply for the Bachelorette for you?
No. So okay. The Bachelorette thing. See, Helen, how I tried to slide out of the Bachelorette?
Yeah, she had to bring that up.
Yeah.
No, I'm just curious, like, how does that happen?
My best friend, she anonymously submitted my application.
Got it.
Amazing.
Yeah, because I lived in Vegas for 12 years. And, I was living the college lifestyle, single guy, thinking I'm cool and making money and stuff like that. She was like, no, you should try something different. No. And she was a fan. And
you're one of the most popular, like, bachelor people from what I've read. And also, I've seen what you've done on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Oh, yeah. That was because of the show.
That was cool.
I did win.
With the chicken. Like, which, right? You said you didn't see that chicken.
I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Like the Bachelorette edition. So they asked me to come on. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, I thought I was, having a chance to win some money, right, based on my knowledge. But, it was for charity, which was even better, right? It was for, Make-A-Wish. Make-A-Wish Foundation of Las Vegas. And one of the questions were like, what is the highest, amount of, food product that's sold in the U.S. or something. It was like salmon, chicken.
Beef. Yeah.
Something. And I almost got the question wrong, but I got it right.
Turkey.
And then I ended the show by saying, I'm just going to walk away with the money. I think it was $30,000 that got donated to Make-A-Wish.
Round of applause for that. Good job.
I'm educated. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I can school you in some trivia.
It's a sweet Prince t-shirt you got on there too, by the way.
You
have to acknowledge that.
appreciate it, man, because, you know, he's that's one of the GOATs. I wore this. I got this in Minnesota when Francis fought JDS. I went to Paisley Park. Yeah, because Prince is one of my childhood favorites. Purple Rain is one of my favorite movies.
That's when JDS was singing Purple Rain to you.
Yeah, JDS sang Purple Rain. Yeah, yes, he was in a jolly mood up until that fight, until that knockout. I mean, that was Francis made him look good. He did. So let's go from one GOAT to another, because we'll circle back to it.
For sure.
But I asked Dana this question because I was really intrigued by it. Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yep.
It's no secret that he wants to fight GSP if he gets through Justin Gaethje, you know, and go out at 30-0. That's the dream, right? And his last fight be against GSP. And GSP's obviously retired, but, you know, there's been some toying back and forth. Mm-hmm. Would he fight him? Dana doesn't want to see a catchweight. He wants this fight, and they talked about 155. Let me ask you this. Has this conversation occurred, and has it occurred about fighting him at 155, a GSP versus Khabib conversation?
I can neither confirm nor deny that. However, I think all parties have some level of interest, right? We represent GSP. GSP is retired, and you know, he made that decision. He wanted a break. He said it himself. He doesn't really like that anxiety and the fight business. But, you know, he's also such a true martial artist that I don't think that competitive nature will ever leave him regardless. Like, some people are just built that way, and he's definitely that way. I remember we did some appearance with G, and he was like, edge schooling me on like intermittent fasting. Have you guys seen the recent picture of him? Like how fit, how in shape?
Oh, I know him, and I've had dinner with him. So him and Faraz with Tim Tam Power Massager.
Yeah.
He was
so,
the first one you rolled with, right?
Yeah, he's one of the first, not the first one, but GSP. He's beating the crap out of me at the Enzo Gracie in New York City.
There's footage.
There's footage. But he did not have any food that entire day. I was shocked. I'm like, hey, at least I'm not doing this on an empty stomach. Not that I had a chance, but hey, he was talking to me about this. Him and Frost. Frost might be the most knowledgeable mind.
He's a wizard.
He is a freaking wizard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can second what you're saying about that intermittent fasting stuff.
Yeah, G is, just a true martial artist and, you know, like just an obsessed kind of like athlete. Like everything he does is like methodical and like precise, and like that's why he's so good. And you're around him, and I'm sure you experienced that. Like he's just wired differently from a standpoint of like, this is one of the greatest athletes ever, not because he was just overly gifted naturally more so than anyone else, but because he worked and dedicated his life to his craft. So I'm confident, and I'm hoping as a fan, right? I have my fan hat on. Is like, I'm hoping to see that fight with Khabib and George. I think that'll do crazy numbers.
Let me rephrase this question.
Mm-hmm.
If this fight happens, mm-hmm. does it happen at 155?
Again, that's a UFC call. I think G, knowing the way he is, he can do that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's a function of, right? If you're asking me that question, I would say, gosh, 155, like, yeah, catch weight sounds cool, but I know Dana stands on the catch weight. 155, can you do it? You know, G, for arguably the greatest fight ever in history. And G is that much of a gamer to be like, yep, I'll do it.
What a way to start the 165-pound schmo division. Get the fight for the GOAT. Hey, fight, man. For the GOAT.
As a fan, I want to see it as, you know, part of his representation team. He's retired.
Got it.
That's fair.
Well, someone else that he also trains with, I know Rory McDonald, and you also represent him. He signed with the PFL back in December.
Love that dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any update about, you know, his status with them?
Yeah. So Rory's great, man. He's such a great dude and awesome father and husband. Like, I love his family dynamic. I'm sure, like, you guys see him on social media there. They're like probably one of the best looking families in all of mixed martial arts.
100%.
100%.
Their kids are cute.
Yeah. So the update with PFL last we talked to Pete Murray, the CEO. You know, we had a great conversation. You know, they're good. You know, I feel like they positioned themselves to where they can make it through this pandemic. You know what I mean? The fighters are compensated. You know, I'm not here to argue kind of what that is, but they plan on picking back up their season in April or May or whenever their regular season is. Like, because they have a format, right? It's different than what a UFC and all these other promotions do. So they planned and prepared, and I'll give them credit for that, to stick to their kind of their format. You know, so that's what we're waiting on, is kind of the announcement of kind of who he'll be fighting, because Rory's coming in to, you know, do work. Like, people think Rory's kind of old because he's been in the sport for so long, but this dude is young. You know what I mean? He's younger than me.
So let me ask you this. Go back to that, because it wasn't that long ago. It was within the past year, I believe, that deal was brokered. What was the motivation behind it? Was it the level of competition? Was it a money situation? Because now we're seeing a highly sought-after guy in Michael Chandler in a very similar position where you're a free agent. What was the decision-making process like when you're working with Rory to go to the PFL?
Yeah, I think the decision process was competition. I think, you know, Rory has, in a lot of ways, been kind of a trendsetter in mixed martial arts, right? He went to UFC, you know, he did his thing there, and it wasn't like a bad split or whatever, but he wanted more, a different set of competition where Bellator, of course, naturally, right? He's compensated and things of that, but more so, if you look at Rory's fights and the way he fights, he's, again, like I like to use the word, he's a savage. He's a beast when it comes to this fight game. And, you know, shout out for Ross the Hobby and those guys over at TriStar. They kind of breed that mentality. So when that challenge came up, got his Bellator, you know, got the belt. And then, okay, a new promotion comes up. The timing was kind of just there, really. It wasn't like actively like, hey, we're trying to leave Bellator and this like that. But, you know, from a business standpoint, it made sense. And for Rory, from a competition standpoint, it made sense, because you can't argue, regardless of, hey, you know, the perception of level of talent and skill set and level of difficulty. You know, when you ask a person to fight twice in one night, you know what I mean, and fight in a tournament style and be able to make X amount of money, just a different format that Rory was excited about, because of the compensation, but also excited about to test, can he fight five times in 1 year? You know what I mean? Like, we just talked about Stipe fighting once a year for the past 3 years, right? And Rory is not a young, he's a young fighter, but he's not like a new kid on the block. You know what I mean? He's a high level fighter. You know what I mean? That's saying, you know, can you
that
imagine
fight
Stipe
with
fighting
Robbie
5
Lawler.
Yeah, like,
incredible.
Yeah, Robbie Lawler and that one of the most iconic fights ever.
No doubt about that at all.
Sorry, just want to also, because I know you also represent Khalil Roundtree. Want to see if there's like an update with him as well.
My guy Khalil, he's stuck in Thailand. There's been issues because, you know, when you leave Thailand, you may not be able to go back, you know, and people that fight out of Tiger, you know, I think they're just recently getting back, or they're stuck on Fight Island for a while, you know. So right now, you know, there was an opportunity for him to fight, but we made the decision to, like, hey, let's make sure things are a little clearer for his kind of traveling and logistics situation. Because when he went to Thailand, he fell in love with it. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like telling someone, like, hey, leave your home and we don't know if you're going to get back. You know, so Khalil, he's steady training. And Khalil, I got to say, Khalil, man, he's one of the most creative.
Yeah, artistic and creative
fighters
out there.
Ever. Mm-hmm. This dude can be a movie producer, a freaking movie director. Like, some guys, you and at least in my opinion, some fighters are just fighters, right? Like some people are just going to do that and maybe one a few other things, but this dude can do anything and everything. And he's such an exciting fighter. I think, you know, when Khalil comes back, you know, it's going to be another exciting fight. He's never a boring fight to watch.
So ever. So realistically, it might make more sense for him to actually fight internationally, like in Abu Dhabi, before he would fight here in Vegas.
Well, I don't know how to answer that because it kind of all depends on what Thailand, right? Like what is allowed back in. It's not a function of he would for sure fight in Vegas. He'll fight in Fight Island, but what are the guarantees of him being able to re-enter?
Because like with the Australian fighters, they're stuck 2-week quarantine before
they can
they're
stuck quarantine, but I do know that people that worked out of Tiger Muay Thai, I mean, I think we ran into them, some of the coaching and everything, we ran into them at Fight Island. That's why I brought that up as the possibility.
Yeah, no, Abu Dhabi. That's what I'm saying, like the Hickman brothers. And,
yes,
and,
the Hickman brothers specifically.
And I forget the other fighters.
I know Peter Yan spent some time there too.
Yeah, Peter Yan, but some of them didn't come back right after the fight.
Right. They had to stay. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know what I mean? So I don't know if they're still chilling there in those nice.
We'll look into
you
that.
You guys were out there. How was that?
It was honestly, I felt safer there in many ways than I feel safer
I
here.
I enjoyed it.
We really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, a lot of what we do is one-on-one, face-to-face interviews. Yeah. You know, that's what we do. We're not big on the Zoom and the conference. We had the Schmo Face Shield, which, by the way, is also for sale on the schmozone.com, which we brought up too. We got the merch launching today, especially, plugging in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but we're all tested. We're tested at least 7 times. So we know, and everyone in the bubble, there's nobody in this bubble that hasn't been tested. Even the locals that were working there were quarantined for 14 days. Yeah. We were only quarantined for 48 hours. Plus, before we even got on the airplane, we were COVID tested. Mm-hmm. So we knew we were COVID free before we even traveled there in the first place.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So they did a very successful bubble, which all of these sports organizations need to learn about.
Yeah, no, they crushed it. I was just telling Dan, I was like, man, like I'm super impressed with like how you guys have handled the, you know, there's only a few tests positive. And naturally, that's going to happen, right? But like there's other leagues that aren't taking those precautions and
they
having
have people,
those structures in place.
Yeah, they have players sneaking out, right? It's, NBA.
I don't know how the NFL, like we're covering Raiders or trying to cover the Raiders. Yeah. We're back and forth, but I'm with my fantasy football season with all my college buddies, I don't even know what was going on with the NFL season. The one other thing I did want to bring up too is because Francis Ngannou is such a high level superstar, and I think his presence. Obviously, you see it with Fast and the Furious. Yeah. It translates to the big screen, the movie screen. Talk about boxing. Obviously, he is what he is in MMA, but some WWE and something that I might as well just propose to you is how do we get the schmo to be like his pallbearer or Paul Heyman.
Pallbearer.
It was a pallbearer,
right? Yeah, with the Undertaker. For the Undertaker.
Oh, I was thinking Paul
Heyman. How can we get the schmo to be that guy for Francis Ngannou's WWE debut?
You know what? I haven't thought about that, but that, now that you say pallbearer, that's a pretty good idea. I don't hate it. For sure, because I think, like, yeah, your guys is dynamic because Francis is kind of introverted. You know what I mean? He's just that physical presence. And with you being by his side, I can kind of see that being a pretty interesting combination. I don't know. We'd have to plan it out, set some meetings.
Planting the seed right now for
like
the
it.
Right time.
I like
it. Is that in his feature too?
Oh, 1,000. Okay, so I like that this is being recorded because, you know, whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, I just have to live with it because I'm going to speak this into existence. Francis is going to be one of the biggest combat sports stars ever. And much to his own doing, right? And he's earned it. He's deserved it. You know, with respect to all the greats before and after him, whatever, he's going to get this belt, right? Hopefully in December. Then I say, you know, John Jones, if you want to come get that work, he can come get it, you know, love it. I think that's great. You know, I would love to work with UFC and say, okay, cool, let's go send him over to WWE, go smoke Brock Lesnar or any of those guys. Obviously, we got him in the movie Fast 9, which was great. So he's a movie star, WWE, the boxing thing, any of the great heavyweights right now. Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder. Who else is out
Anthony
there?
Anthony Joshua.
Andy Ruiz, line them up. Like, I'm confident, and you guys will see it. A lot of people don't see Francis's skill sets because his fights haven't really been able. You can't see all the tools in his toolbox. When I mean to tell you that Eric Nixick and Dewey Cooper got this boy ready.
He's going to wrestle?
Well, I don't know about the wrestling coaching, no, but the wrestling, you know, I kind of see him. He used to talk about Paul Bearer with Undertaker, right? Undertaker was one of my favorite wrestlers. But his brother Kane.
Yes.
Oh,
you remember
with the
that?
Mask on. Yeah.
I met Kane as a kid
me?
With the mask on.
I don't know if Francis can be that kind of wrestler, but I envision if you were to say who is that twin to Francis, it's Kane.
I love Kane. When the music.
The old school Kane.
God.
I heard now, yeah. I don't watch it anymore now, but do they still have Kane? Is Kane? I know Undertaker.
Isn't he like a politician now too?
Yeah, I think he's
don't tell me that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to ruin.
I don't even want to hear it.
We don't want to hear it.
The Kane I know is black and red suit.
Yes.
Black red face
oh,
mask.
Yeah.
The
so
long
badass.
Hair.
Yeah.
And just doesn't speak.
Doesn't speak.
Yeah.
And he ruined it now. Any final thoughts? Any final message you want to get out there? Where can they find you? I know you got the Moves podcast. You can listen to.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to talk, as you guys can see. You know, however, I don't like to come on in this space and talk. But Moves Podcast at Moves Podcast on IG, you can find us. You know, we just talk about people making moves because I'm all about the kind of phrase is chestnut checkers, right? It's like, you know, I like to approach thing and no better, no worse. As an MMA manager, this game is, in my opinion, very different than what I know it to be like working at UFC, right? And I'll just give you this like context really quick. It was like when I came over to CAA, right, and I started repping fighters, I learned the business from a different perspective. While at the same time being at the biggest agency in the sports agency in the world, CAA, right? I see my colleagues, you know, biggest NFL agents in the world, biggest my boss, big Forbes list guys, agents, right? Like, so I see a level of professionalism, a level of deal making, a level of clientele, client servicing that I was like, oh my goodness, like this is a different animal. MMA hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't reached that on the representation side. I'm not saying that I'm the best manager out there. I don't want to be that best guy or touted as that. Like, I'm not trying to be, you know, the guy that's always in the cameras. Like this is the first like proactive interview that I've done in my 3 years of I'm not yeah. trying to you
thank
know
thank you.
And you made a really good cameo with Francis on the Hot Box and Mike
yeah,
Tyson
so that
yeah.
I did
podcast.
Again, I was in the shadows of that, right? And Mike called me in, and when Mike says come
yeah.
into the room, you come into the room. But that was not planned. It was just supposed to be Francis on there because me as an agent, like it's on my opinion that you take a step back. You let the client do the work. You know what I mean? I just try to stay humble. I stay out of people's way. I respect people as long as you give it back. You know what I mean? I work my ass off at what my craft is. You know what I mean? I look at things as a business approach and try to be smart about everything that we do when it comes to all of our clients, right? From Francis, Khalil, Kevin Lee, like all these guys, I love to work with them, you know, and they're just good human beings. I don't try to fake it. Like in this MMA industry, I'm hoping that, you know, it continues to elevate with the sport. And I'm talking about the representation side. Like there's a lot of guys I look up to in the space and there's some people that, you know, hey, I would do things differently. But again, maybe I could be wrong too. You know, I never shy away from that. But that's something that I'm looking forward to, man. Just continue to rise with our clients and try to represent them the best way that I can, just humbly. But I appreciate you guys having me on. Again, I don't know, you know, if I'm gonna get used to me being on the front side. Because if it were me, an MMA fan, because I know the MMA fans. I'm like, who the fuck is that? Who the fook is that guy?
Who the fook?
I love to type it
in. But you know something? A lot of MMA fans are going to be tuned in to who you are after this podcast, after the bombshells you just dropped. You're a great speaker. You've done a fantastic job.
Yes.
You represent some of the best guys in this game. You are the first agent we've had on the Schmozone podcast. Oh, so congratulations for that. Final thoughts, Helen. Sign us off here.
Get your Schmozone t-shirts. Remember, the first 100, got to do the plug.
Some custom messaging from Helen and myself. Yeah. Thank you so much, Markel, for coming on. Have a safe flight and travels back to Los Angeles. This Schmozone episode 29.
Mm-hmm.
We're out.
Tune in.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.